The Fan.
Saturday morning, hats off to you. You are in the zone on The Fan.
Look at you in the hockey. I can't believe that. Right from the start?
Well, if it was up to producer Brett, we would have played all three goals. And perhaps,
I like it. I'm with Brett.
Perhaps every Kaprizov goal so far in this season.
Why not?
He would have had his way.
You know?
Well, because Beyond the Pond begins in 2 hours.
Oh.
And we're a hoop show.
But you moved to hockey in the last few weeks. I'm very surprised.
Well, there's something special going on, right?
It seems like
they found a... Phenom's not too strong a word. Although at 23, are you too old to be a phenom, even though he is a rookie?
No.
You can still be a phenom because you're brand new to the league, right?
That's true.
Yeah, I think the Wild found themselves a phenom.
Okay.
I think, actually, I just like to say phenom.
Right.
But, yeah, how about that?
Could he be like Sidney Crosby?
Well, he's trending in the right way.
Okay.
Scoreless game heading into the third period, and then your guy Kaprizov takes over with...
I love it.
With three. Do they still throw hats on the... on the ice, well, there aren't really fans in the stands yet.
That's true. We can't do that now.
But that's still a thing, right? People still do that. I always wondered about, do you go to the game with a crappy hat just in case? Because you don't want to give up, you know, one of your good hats. Do people think about that going to hockey games? Like, I'll wear a hat, but I'll bring this old, you know, ratty one from, you know, 1996 just in case.
It's possible.
There's a hat trick. So that was a big night for your Wild.
That's all you got?
That's pretty much all I got, except that I will remind folks that at 10 o'clock, Fallness, Micheletti, Cast of Thousands, they'll
tee it up.
The saliva, the drool, they'll go Kaprizov 10 to noon.
Okay.
From Beyond the Pond. We're a hoop show, that's what we do, but lots of NFL conversation this morning as well, Double T, because free agency hits officially Wednesday. They can start chatting on Monday.
Dak Prescott gets a big deal.
Dak got a big deal. There's all kinds of interesting stuff I want to talk about with the NFL. And
reconstruction going on in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes.
Right, and yeah. Packer fans are waiting for the same to happen with Rodgers' deal to open up some cash. But there's some stuff that goes into that as far as how many years you want to commit when you've got the youngster in waiting. So,
who's the youngster in waiting?
Jordan Love,
their
number one pick from a year.
Oh.
So we'll get to all of that, all right? There's plenty of NFL conversation coming up for us in hour number two. Hour number one, devoted to basketball. It's March Madness time.
Your favorite time of the year.
It's my favorite time of the year. I've already been soaked in it the last couple of days watching conference tournament action, and COVID has reared its ugly head.
For sure.
We certainly thought it might with these conference tournaments, and there was many conversation about it. Is it even worth having conference tournaments because it might put teams in peril for the big dance? But obviously the almighty dollar speaks, and the tournaments have gone through. We've seen three teams. First, Duke. A few days ago, Duke had a positive test, and their season ended abruptly as they were getting set, I think, for the quarterfinals in the ACC tournament. And then yesterday, Virginia and Kansas. I mean, we're talking three pretty big-time programs got shut down, and for... Kansas and Virginia, there's certainly concern whether they'll be able to play in the big dance. You've got 7 days. This happened Friday. The tournament starts on Friday this year. So they're locked down and hoping that they'll be able to get. They will be allowed, from what I've heard, they will get into the tournament, but the tournament is going to have four teams in waiting that are there if a team has to drop out.
Okay.
Here's the interesting thing that I read. Let's say the Baylor Bears, which are likely to be a number one seed despite losing to Oklahoma State last night in a great game in the Big 12 tournament. Let's say Baylor, at some point in the next couple of weeks, has a positive test and they have to drop out. Now, one of these four teams, let's just say it's Michigan State. I think Michigan State's probably in, but let's just say they get left out, but they're a team in waiting. They'll take Baylor's spot. They're not going to reseed and re-bracket because everybody, millions of people do brackets, right? You can't change the bracket once it's printed. So the bracket is the bracket.
Okay.
If the number one seed of a region gets knocked out by COVID, the team that replaces it goes in as the number one seed. Okay. So think about that.
Yeah. What about Georgetown?
Well, I got that on my list.
If they win the Big East.
I'm getting to that. I've got that here. All right. It's a great story. Your buddy's one game away from bursting bubbles, but it doesn't make the first 5 minutes of the show.
Okay. When you talk about college basketball and teams that could be on the bubble, if somebody gets knocked out, somebody could move into that spot.
But those are the teams I'm talking about
why Georgetown came to mind.
Like, if Georgetown loses today, they're not going to probably be one of the four teams waiting to get in because they're pretty down the list. They had a rocky year, but they're really putting it together late.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. But I just found it interesting that let's just say at Michigan State or whoever gets suddenly week two of the tournament, Sweet 16 weekend, a team gets COVID, they have to go out, and they were a one seed. That team that wasn't even in the tournament and hasn't played in a week and a half.
But Michigan State hasn't had a great season either.
Is now a one seed. No, but in the last 2 weeks, Trent, they beat three of the top five teams in the country. That's pretty good resume building right there. You know, your guy was like 4-8 in the middle of January. Kudos to them. They put it together, and they beat Creighton tonight. They're in the tournament, and they're bursting bubbles.
Michigan State was just about the same, weren't they?
They were, but when you knock off Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa, I think it was, in the last 2 weeks of the tournament, that's pretty good resume building right there. And they, however, did themselves no favors in getting just destroyed by Maryland on Thursday. I mean, yeah, it wasn't even... It was weird because
COVID has reared its ugly head for the Spartans as well. You know, Tom Izzo, you know, he was the first one to come down, you know, with COVID, and once the head coach is away from his team for a certain period of time, you know, all of a sudden now you can't find that rhythm and consistency that you're looking for.
It's so true. And some teams bounce back. Look at Michigan. You know, they take a 3 week pause, and I remember their first game back was at Wisconsin, and they had just beaten Wisconsin by like a million. And I'm thinking, all right, well, the Badgers are going to get revenge on this team that hasn't played in 3 weeks. That's been terrific. And they came right back, and they looked like they hadn't missed a beat. And then you look at a team like Baylor, which, you know, was undefeated up until 2 weeks ago and is going to be a one seed and a favorite. They still don't look like Baylor. And it's been a number of weeks since they came back from their COVID pause. So you just don't know how...
That's true. You really don't.
You know, it depends which players, if they were main players that were affected that haven't gotten everything back yet. So it's really been the wild card of this season. And I think as we go all the way, turn the dial back to October, hoping we would get to this point, there were obviously no guarantees that we'd have conference tournaments or March Madness.
Because it's here.
A year ago, this is when it all stopped. And we sat here thinking, really? I mean, for me, to not have March Madness, and for those of us that love college basketball, we knew the NBA was paused, you know, and that hurts because we love the NBA. But for me to lose March Madness,
the day the world stopped.
Yeah, I mean it was crushing
when the sports world went dark.
Right, and I'll tell you what, we've been watching these conference tournaments. There've been some fans in the arenas. We're hearing some booing. You know, the most booing I've heard so far has happened in Indianapolis when Archie Miller took the court, and when the Hoosiers left the court, you could hear boos. It was just kind of nice to hear boos again. You know, it's just slowly getting back to normal. And as we talk about fans in the stands, the big news yesterday that the Twins will be allowed to have 10,000 fans.
It's nice.
To start the season.
Yeah.
And even the Wolves, should anybody choose to go.
What are you getting, 3,000?
Is that the number? I haven't heard a number.
Is it 3 or 5?
I don't know. I didn't see a number.
Oh, okay. Wild is 3?
Brett said 3. Brett Blakemore, producer, says the Wild will allow 3,000. I would imagine it would be similar if they can scare up 3,000 for the Wolves games. The week, so the Wolves, April 5th, are allowing fans back. I think that was that's a Kings game. The next week, they have four home games against Zach LaVine and the Bulls, the Nets, the Bucks, and Jimmy Butler and the Heat. And if you're going to have fans back, that's a pretty good start to have those four teams come in. I know my son's bouncing off the wall saying, we got to go. So there are a few people that are interested to watch basketball.
Now, will they open up tickets only to season ticket holders, or will there be access for the general public?
I think initially it's season ticket holders, right? And you see what kind of response you have, and if that fills it up, they deserve the
first
shot. But
you're a season ticket holder, aren't you?
Well, I was up until the season. My group of guys, we didn't renew because there was no season, so I don't know where we stand. But as we slowly see things opening up, with the governor yesterday obviously dialed things back, or is it forward? How does that work? He moved the dial in a good direction.
He's
in a big way.
Back, I think.
To see restaurants at 75%, to know that obviously
health clubs are moving up.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a senior. It looks like graduations are going to happen. Proms are going to happen.
Yeah.
So we're slowly inching our way back to normal.
Boys and girls high school basketball tournament look like it's going to take place in April.
Is that when they're? I was going to ask you because you're always involved with that with Channel 45. Are they pushing it back a little bit?
Yeah,
into April.
We're scheduled to do some games in April.
All right.
Yeah.
Great. So yes, I think we're all just itching for normalcy at this point. And as we talk about college basketball and the fact that fans are in the stands, it's not the same. You don't have the bands and the crazy, cheerleaders, mascots, all that. None of that's happening yet. But there's just some reaction and hearing boos. It's just a welcome thing to hear after all these months.
Okay.
So we're going to talk plenty of Gophers basketball and the future of that program as the season ended. It ended, I thought, in a pretty impressive way, a game that they were getting just blown out by Ohio State, and Patino's crew really rallied back to cut it to one for a second there in the closing seconds, and weren't able to get the W. The same thing happened to Ohio State yesterday. They were killing Purdue, and Purdue fights back to force overtime, and they were down double digits in the closing minutes. But Patino's kids didn't quit. They fought hard to the end, and I think we all believe that the end is here. In fact, I saw a report, I think Marcus Fuller had it in the paper this morning, that there might be some interest from New Mexico in Richard Patino. So these things typically happen pretty quickly, right? When a college team knows they're going to move on from their coach. Some thought we might hear even yesterday.
Yeah.
But I would imagine this week the end will officially come for Richard Pitino. I think it'll come for Archie Miller in Indiana as well. The state of that program is, I think, at a point now where I've never seen it. Looking at what they have coming up, who's coming back, what the future looks like, recruits, it's ugly. And so I think there'll be clarity in the Big Ten. I think those two programs are probably the only two where we'll see coaching changes. Your school and my school, I think, are the two that are going to move on. So, I thought the two teams played very differently in their final game. I thought the Gophers fought hard, played hard. The Indiana team, you probably didn't watch the game, but they didn't make a basket the final 10 minutes of the game, and they were 2-for-8 from the foul line. I mean, it was just awful. And when you've got a couple thousand Hoosier fans in there, they're going to let you have it.
Well, when a team goes 2-for-8, you can't blame them on the coach. That's not the coach's fault.
No, agreed.
Not 2-for-8 from the free throw line. That's not his fault. Now, if the guys are not playing hard, not executing well, energy level is down, some of that blame can go toward the coach. But, when guys walk at the free throw line and you go 2-for-8, you can't blame the coach for that. And that allowed the Gophers against Ohio State to get themselves back into the game, because coming down the stretch, the pressure got to Ohio State also at the free throw line.
And you can't make an excuse with injuries, but when you lose Kalscher and Robbins, you're not going to compete. And they were razor thin as it was, right? They were 7 or 8 players deep, and then you lose those two guys, and then Gotch regressed and was hurt and wasn't anywhere near what he was early in the year. I don't know, part of me kind of feels for Patino because, man, back in the January, Trent, when they were blowing out Michigan and Ohio State, they're looking at a 5 seed. And then, granted, things started to turn before the injuries.
Right.
But they really...
Well, the Illinois game, when the Maryland game, when they lost at home.
Yeah.
That's when things begin to turn. Now, you lose two players who are very important to what you do from a team standpoint can hurt. We all know that. But when you lose those two players, you cannot lose to Northwestern and Nebraska.
Yeah.
you should not lose to Northwestern. I mean, a team comes onto your home floor, 13-game losing streak. You get off to a 17-3 start, and then in the second half, everything falls apart. You go to Nebraska. They're struggling here and there. Marcus Carr comes out and has a huge game, but you're still not able to get over the hump. Yeah, I understand injuries are a huge part of the game, and you want to have your full team when you're going down the stretch to finish off the season to see if you can finish off things the right way. But you know, there are some losses that you know that it's just hard for certain people to take.
Yeah, but I understand that. But going forward, that backcourt's going to look nice next year, don't you think? I mean, I think Mashburn and Trey Williams, those kids really improved and developed over the last 6-8 weeks.
We don't know. It all depends who comes in. If you change the head coaching position, it all depends on who comes in to take over the team.
I get that.
Now, will these kids fit into a new system?
Will they stay?
And also, will they fit into the system of the new guy coming in?
Yeah.
See, you know, all these, for players returning, you know, under one coach, I was allowed to do certain things. But all of a sudden now, a new guy comes in. He has a different mindset, a different philosophy, a different way of playing. And the question becomes now, will my style fit into his system? And if not, maybe it's time for me to look to see if I can go somewhere else. So it's very hard to say what these two guys could look like next year because you don't know what the head coaching situation is going to look like up until this
time. No, I get that. But they look like players, right? Like in this system,
I don't know yet.
They look good. They developed. They got better as the season went on.
I don't know because we saw too much inconsistency. So we don't know yet.
But didn't you see, as they needed to play more, didn't you see Williams and Mashburn gain confidence, get more comfortable, and certainly prove that they could be a nice backcourt in the Big Ten? I'm granted. I get it. A new coach comes in.
Like I said, I don't know.
But still, they look like players.
I saw too much inconsistency. You know, one night, you know, you might get 16 points and you might get 2, or you might get 4, but you might get 16 and you might be 4 for 20. You might be 4 for 18, so I don't know yet. So yeah. I think, you know, over a course of a year, when you see consistency build throughout the season, then you can say to yourself, going down the road, I can see these two guys really gelling together.
We've been gelling together for 26 years and change. We'll come back after a pause, continue to talk hoops, college, and NBA variety. And we welcome your input. 651-989-5326. Toll free, 800-320-5326. Or let your fingers do the talking. Email us at the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox, booth@kfan.com. More hoops to talk about. Just getting started.
And the Fan.
Back with you at 823, the dulcet tones of my buddy Pepe Willie, 94 East. I hear his voice, and I know golf season is not far behind. My golf buddy will be back from his second home in Nevada. We'll be hitting the links. His courses started opening up this last week. It won't be long. Golf season. Spring. March Madness. Things are looking up, Double T.
I'm going to send my kid out with you this year.
Are you? That'd be great. I'd love that.
Yeah, you can give him a few tips.
No, he could probably give me tips the way I hear he hits the ball. Yeah. But that'd be delightful.
Where do you play at mostly?
Baker Nationals, kind of my home away from home. Okay. I love Baker. It's only about 15 minutes from my house.
Sounds like it's
but
big
I play
time.
All over. I love Victory Links up in Blaine
as
well.
Based on the name, Baker National.
What's that?
Sounds big time.
It does sound big time.
It does.
It's a park course. It's a great course. Beautiful course. Been playing it for 25 years, I guess, since I've been here. Speaking of things looking up, your buddy Patrick Ewing was in the news a couple days ago, and I thought of you when I read the comments, as he's walking around Madison Square Garden, because they're playing the Big East tournament at, what do they call the garden? The greatest, whatever. It's one of the great basketball venues.
The world's most famous.
That's what it is. The world's most famous basketball arena.
They said, no, the world's most famous arena.
Oh, we don't even say basketball.
No, because you've had so many wonderful events there. Ollie Frazier won.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Messier and Rangers won the Stanley Cup back in the mid-90s. Frazier and the Knicks only in the 70s. So a lot of big-time events. Michael Jackson's been there. Bruce Springsteen. So
yeah, I'm right there in the middle of Manhattan. And obviously Patrick Ewing, one of the great stars to play in that building. And he's asked for his credentials as he's walking through Madison Square Garden this week. And he made a point after his quarterfinal victory in the Big East. He was ticked off about it, and rightfully so. I mean, granted, he's been out of the game for a while. But when you see Patrick Ewing walking down the hall.
Right. Maybe somebody didn't know who Patrick Ewing was.
Right, but who has the guts to say,
hey,
can I see your credential, please, sir?
I can tell you this.
Look up in the rafters, young man.
I can tell you this. If you're working for Jim Dolan or James Dolan and you don't do what you're supposed to do, you might find yourself on the outside looking in very quickly.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
So I found it amusing hearing his post game, not talking about the game, but he was more ticked off that, you know, I built this place. This look up in the rafters, man. This is my home. I thought that was fun. So meanwhile, last night, his team, as the eighth seed, surprised Seton Hall. And I hadn't watched Georgetown play. You know, they got off to we talked about it briefly in the last segment. They were off to a bad start this year. Last year was kind of a disaster as a bunch of guys left the program.
Yeah,
and starting to wonder, you know, is Patrick building something here? Well, they've put together a nice little end of the season, took down Seton Hall last night. And I don't know, again, I don't watch a lot of Georgetown hoops, but he's got the towel over his shoulder, just like, you know, obviously his old coach, John Thompson. I don't wonder if he's doing that just this season as an homage because he passed away in the past 6 months, or if that's something he's always done. But it just looked right to see Patrick Ewing with the big old white towel hanging over his shoulder as he coached his team now to one game away from an NCAA tournament bid. They have to take down Creighton today, which is also interesting because Creighton was in the news. Their coach was in the news last week. Doug McDermott. Is it Doug? Greg? Greg, I think. McDermott.
Okay. Let's go.
Who I'm sure you heard his comments a week ago, where he was talking to his team and said, guys, we have to all be in this, and I need both feet in the plantation. You have to stay in the plantation.
Stay on the plantation.
Can't get off the plantation.
Right.
Remarkable words. And remarkable to me that he was suspended for a game, and then he's right back coaching the Big East tournament this week. And
I mean, the choice of words may have been wrong, but I understood what he was saying. I mean, I don't think there was no malice to what he was saying, but the choice of words could have been wrong.
The fact that it's in your head.
I mean, know, but
it just shows how you were raised.
Yeah, I think the choice of word was wrong to use, but I don't think there was no malice behind the intent of what he said.
If you're an African-American player, though, do you have a hard time still playing for him, knowing that that's in his DNA? It's kind of like that announcer that went viral yesterday who thought he was off the air, high school announcer, and used awful language.
I can hear that. I mean, but you know, as an African-American man sitting here right now, and sometimes, you know, things can be said in a certain way where, you know, it comes out the wrong way, you know, but what's the major intent behind it? Now, I don't think there was a malice intent behind what came out of his mouth that day.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I still find it weird that he's just right back coaching like it was nothing. He did lose a 4-star recruit, a young man named Ty Washington, who's decommitted from Creighton. As I said, a 4-star who's now going to look at going elsewhere. I totally understand that.
Yeah, everybody's going to take it differently, you know. And I get, hey, if a guy feels like that, what he says is something that I'm very uncomfortable with, well, then you have to make a move and go somewhere else.
Now, obviously,
I get that.
You're not a 20-year-old man. You're about a 60-year-old man.
But I am a 60-year-old man.
If you were a 20-year-old man in the locker room and you heard your coach say that, obviously there's a whole lot that goes around how
I've
you
heard,
feel about this.
I've
man.
Heard a lot of worse things.
From your coaches?
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have, you would.
Just go play.
No, not a big deal to you.
Would I mean, you may not like what is being said, but I'm here. So I still have to, you know, I got a choice. I can quit or I can continue to play. And then I can rise above it. Because at the end of the day, I still have to go on the basketball court and do my job. And that's why I'm here to play basketball. So I can't allow, I'm in this situation as it is.
Yeah.
You know, do I run to another school? Do I run to another place? Well, another school could be just as worse. So I only have so many times to move around in a 4-year situation. So even though it may not, the words may not be some of the things I want to hear while I'm at this place, but at the end of the day, you know, for me, you have to be able to rise above certain things to achieve the goals that you have set for yourself.
I hear you. It's logical, but I would think at the very least it would spark a conversation. Let's talk about this and let's figure out why this
happened. Well, sometimes it is what it is. Yeah. I mean, I played for guys who was harsh, degrading, demeaning, but it is what it is. I mean, this is the person I'm dealing with. So how do I navigate through these waters? I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that it can't affect certain people in the wrong way. But at the end of the day, as a player, I still have to figure out if I'm going to stay here, I have to figure out how to navigate these waters to get to a place where I'm trying to go so that down the road I don't have to deal with this.
Right. It's just too bad. It makes things uncomfortable, and no kid should have to deal with it. So your guy, your buddy, Patrick, who you told me during the break you chatted with last night, Double T, he's got to be pretty excited to be one win away
from very happy last
the big
night.
Dance, huh?
And I called him last night, and he didn't pick up right away, and he calls me back about 5 minutes later. He said I was on the other line with MJ, you know, Michael Jordan. That's MJ.
Awesome. Yeah, right? I figured that.
And I said, So I said your boys are calling you. Oh, your boys are calling in to check in, man, and say congratulations and good luck going into the Big East final game. But I said, I have one thing I would like to say to you before you take the court tomorrow. He said, what is that? I said, tell your guards to come back to the free throw line and rebound those long, loose rebounds that's coming off those missed three-point shots by the opposition. You have to help your big man out. I say, now, when I was playing with you, and if I was not back at that free throw line, picking up those long, loose rebounds, I was going to hear from you, right? He said, yeah, that's true. I say, so please tell your guards the same thing tomorrow that you told me 20-some years ago.
Love it. I love it. Watching 5:30 tip-off. It's Georgetown Creighton to see who goes to the dance. Another former coach of yours, well, not that Ewing was a former coach. Obviously, he was a former teammate. But another guy that you were with, Rick Pitino, is one win away from the NCAA tournament as well. I understand that.
Yeah.
I said another former coach.
Oh.
Obviously, Ewing was not your coach. He was your teammate. Pitino could be in the dance in a year where Coach K and John Calipari are out of the dance. Those guys, their seasons are over. And here's Rick Pitino, or Richard's pop, who's coaching at Iona College, and they have bucked the odds because they were a low seed, and they are now one win away from getting back to the big dance in a game that normally most people wouldn't give a second thought to, a mid-major team that's going to be a 14, 15, 16 seed next weekend. But it's Rick Pitino coaching that team, and suddenly there's a tension that he might be back in the big dance. And kind of things seem right in the big dance when Rick Pitino's in it. And that's kind of a neat thing to watch today to see if he can get his boys back.
Yeah, Rick's a very good basketball coach. I really enjoyed my time playing for him. And he was the first coach that put a system together that was tailor-made for my game.
Yeah.
You know, pressing and trapping, shooting three-point shots, trying to score 110 points and playing as fast as we could. But also, he expected us to become students of the game as well. And when things broke down, not to forget about number 33 because he was our best player at that time. But, you know, as long as Rick can, you know, continue to, you know, to stay from all the off-the-court stuff that has kind of robbed him over the last few years of being at a high-level Division I school, he's a wonderful basketball coach.
So he's one win away. The Big Ten will play its semifinals today, and we were talking last week. You know, you always seem to see big upsets in the Big Ten tournament. Year in, year out, a 9 and 8 seed gets through to the semis or even the finals. And I thought last week, of all years, it would be really interesting and surprising to me to see one of the top 4 teams not get to the semifinals this year. And as it turned out, they all advanced. Even though Ohio State technically was a 5 seed, they were clearly a better team than Purdue this season and were in the top 10, you know, up until couple weeks ago when they went on a 3 or 4 game losing streak. But here we sit today, Michigan against Ohio State, and then Illinois, Iowa. 4 teams that will be top 2 seeds in the Big Dance starting next weekend. It's been 21 years since a Big Ten team has cut down the nets for one shining moment. This year,
21 years, you said?
Yeah, it was Mateen Cleaves' Michigan State team, right?
It's in 2000. Been that long?
It's been that long. Here's a year where there's no Duke. There's no Kentucky. There's likely no Kansas, or at least not a dominant Kansas. There's one big Goliath, and that's unbeaten Gonzaga, certainly.
And Jalen Suggs.
And Jalen Suggs, correct. This feels like one of those years where if it's not going to happen this year,
when?
When is it going to happen? And I guess my question for, I don't know how much Gonzaga is you, how much Gonzaga you have watched.
I watch them every night.
Well, I know with the Suggs factor, you know, it gives you something to look at. I've watched them play a handful of times, and I saw them destroy Iowa earlier in the season. And they have, it's not like they're playing in this conference where they don't get tested every night. We know that. But they've played five or six games against big-time teams and mowed everybody down. They struggled a bit against BYU the other night. They were down 12 at halftime, and that got me to turn it on. I'm like, whoa, it was 53-41 at half. I'm like, they gave up that many points, and I guess BYU was shooting the lights out. And as you would expect, second half starts, and they go on like a 12-2 run, and they were leading within 5 minutes of the game and got the win. They stayed undefeated. I think Illinois and Michigan both have the talent to knock down Gonzaga. Not that they will, but I think they could. And I'm up right now, Double T, Illinois to me looks as good as any team in the country. Even Michigan has kind of struggled, and
yeah,
it took them a while to get their legs the other day, and they didn't look great. And maybe they'll come around and look just fine. But you ask me right now, I give Illinois as good a chance as anybody.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Ayo Dosunmu is just exactly what you need.
Yeah, because they got that one player who can go get you 25 or 30 by himself in the big game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has that type of talent. He's a unique talent. And at this time of the year, if you are lucky enough to get to a Final Four type situation, you need that one guy that can have that type of game in a special moment.
No doubt. And you've got the big guy. You even got a backup big guy. You got the senior guard in Trent Frazier that can knock down big shots.
I love his first name.
I know you do.
Okay.
I'm bullish on Illinois, which I kind of...
I'm with you on that, yeah.
I think they have a really good chance. And if it's Illinois-Gonzaga in the championship game, man, give me some popcorn, you know, and just watch every second of that game. That will be so entertaining. All right, we're late for a pause. We'll come back. Looks like Matt wants to check some college hoops. We'll do that, and we'll convert over to the NBA as the second half started, and suddenly the Wolves are unbeatable. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
On the Fan.
We are back, 8:45 on a Saturday morning. You're in the zone. Trent Tucker, Dave Senekin hanging out in the 651 Carpet Studio for another hour and 15 minutes or so. We will pass the puck at 10 o'clock to Beyond the Pond for all your Kaprizov love from 10 to noon today on The Fan. Saturdays with Sauce follows that at high noon. Always live, always local on the weekends on The Fan. We've been talking college hoop. We are going to move on to the NBA in just a moment, but our buddy Matt, who's a Michigan fan, has been holding for a while, and I'm sure he's giddy about Juwan Howard's squad getting set to make a run in the big dance. First, they have to get past Ohio State today as we welcome Matt to the program. Good morning.
Morning, guys. Yeah, I'm giddy, Dave, but I'm also hoping that Juwan doesn't get upset again like he did yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw that, but
yeah.
My God, it took half the team to hold back the 6'9 forward. He was quoted as saying that his mother raised him in that tough Chicago area to, when someone comes after you, go after them. So hopefully that won't happen. But, Dave, real quick, I heard, you know, Jeff Goodman, that college basketball guy,
yep.
He referenced yesterday, he was posed the question about Archie. He does not think Indiana's going to let him go because they don't want to pay the $10 million. What do you think?
That's a lot to pay. And then Mark Cuban's on record saying, you know, he's not going to pony up. It's not his job, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
I have a feeling they won't pull the trigger on Archie Miller, at least initially. But I think if Boston decides to move on from Brad Stevens at some point after the season, you know, it might be May, it might be June. Then if Stevens wants to come, then you make the move. But I think Goodman's right. I think they're going to hold on because that $10 million this year when athletic departments are bleeding, I mean, even for Richard Pitino, it's a $1.5 million buyout. Which, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't sound like a ton of money, but when you're cutting sports, it's tough to justify that.
It's a tough sale.
$10 million, that is a big number, so he very well might be right.
And they just paid Tom Allen an extension too, the football coach. So who knows? But you know, you guys, he also said something, and he, this guy, Goodman's pretty plugged in. Gopher fans may not like this. He said quite decisively that he thinks Chet Holmgren is going to Gonzaga, and he cited the friendship with Suggs. So I'm wondering if Suggs is like urging him to go there or whatever. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. But you guys, two really, really quick things. Obviously right now, I just want our Big Ten, our four semifinalists to not have to pause because of the virus so they can get in the tournament. But do you think, as I do, that two of the four, Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan, Illinois, can make the Final Four? Because I think they can. I think they're all four are that good. And I think that all four of them, or at least two of them, could possibly beat Gonzaga. I'm not sure about Baylor anymore. Since they shut down, they haven't been quite as good. But what do you think of that? And lastly, Professor, I think Dave needs to let you be the Big East tournament correspondent. text your buddy Pat Ewing, who I am rooting for. I can't wait to watch that game today. Text him, get a quote, see if he's mad still about having to show a badge at MSG, and bring it back to us. So be our Big Ten or be our Big East correspondent and go Hoyas.
I'll make it happen for you.
All right, thanks, Matt. If two Big Ten teams don't get to the Final Four, I think it's a disappointment this year.
Oh, okay.
Right? I mean, likely, all right, likely, Illinois and Michigan are one seeds. Iowa and Ohio State are likely two seeds, I would think. And certainly, if Iowa or Ohio State win today, they're for sure two seeds. I think Michigan and Illinois are favored to advance to the championship. But I think four of the top eight seeds in the Big Dance are likely to be Big Ten teams. If two don't get to the Final Four, I think it's a big disappointment. I don't know which two. I mean, Michigan and Illinois, to me, feel like the most complete teams.
Okay.
I think Ohio State's been certainly trending down a bit. They lost, what, four in a row down the stretch. Iowa feels like they peaked earlier in the year. They've been dealing with injuries. Wieskamp came back last night. They were without Frederick for a long time. They haven't had all their pieces, and they lost Nungy, their backup center, to a torn ACL. That was a big loss.
That's a big loss.
You know, if Garza has to leave the court for a while, that kid could come in and hold things down for a while. They don't have that guy anymore.
But also, they have to shoot the ball well from the outside.
And they usually do.
Yeah, if the perimeter game is not going well for the Hawkeyes, that now you put too much pressure on Garza to try to carry the team by himself. And that's when they can pack in the defense and take his space away and make things more difficult for him. I think as Iowa moves on to the Big Dance, they're going to have to shoot the ball well from the outside to continue to advance.
And they went cold last night, almost let the Badgers get back and win that game late, and they were able to escape to move on. So, yes, it feels like the Big Ten this year is going to kind of strut its stuff in the Big Dance. But Matt made a good point. You know, one COVID test can change, you know, everything. So,
oh, and also, you know, one bad shooting night can change everything.
Well, for sure.
Because as you say, it's your most favorite time of the year. It's a one-and-done type situation. You could be a huge favorite. If you had to play this team 10 times, you'd probably beat them 9. But on this night, things weren't going well for you, and they were able to find the basket a little bit more consistently than you could, and then they knock you off.
Oklahoma State, Texas is another game to watch for Wolves fans who are hoping they hang on to the lottery pick because Cade Cunningham is likely the number one pick in the draft. I've watched the last couple games Oklahoma State
has
played.
You like him as a player?
Oh, my goodness. What
position does he play?
Well, he's like a point forward, I think. You know,
How big is he?
He's like 6'8", 6'9".
Really?
He's kind of a Luka. I mean, he doesn't have the Luka game. He doesn't pass. But he's going to play that role where he's going to bring the ball up the court. He knocked down a couple big threes late to knock off Baylor.
What are you going to do with D'Angelo Russell?
They could play together. They could all play together.
Edwards, you got a lot of guys.
I mean, he could play off the ball as well, too. But he's a guy that can play with the ball in his hands. He's just so talented.
We'll wait for that when it happens.
We will. And obviously, the Wolves, even if they finish with the worst record in the league, will just have a 40% chance of keeping that top three pick. Otherwise, it goes to Golden State. Speaking of those Wolves, Double T, I turned on the game Thursday night. You know, I'm watching
the game.
Playing the Pelicans.
I'm serious, but I missed it.
Well, you missed the game of the year, Double T.
Oh, okay.
I'm watching Indiana get their season.
I think I was in New Prague.
Well, you might have been. You missed something kind of delightful, to be honest. Because
okay.
I turned it on, and they're down 20-6. And I thought, seriously? Really? It's just
Here we go again.
They end up being the first team since 98 to trail in a game by 15 and win the game by 30. As they beat the Pelicans 135-105.
Really?
And tell me if you think this is sustainable. You think it's sustainable that Noel, McDaniels, and Nas combined will shoot 84% from the floor? Because that's something we can watch night in, night out.
I think you can answer your own question.
Noel was in the zone. In 28 minutes, double T, he shot 11 for 13 from the floor, 6 of 7 from 3. In, as I said,
had a Brandon Johnson
28 points in 28 minutes. What's that?
Had a Brandon Johnson night like Brandon Johnson against the Hawkeyes.
That is absolutely correct. Right? He was in the zone for that night. McDaniels in 25 minutes, 8 for 9, 4 for 5 from 3, 3 blocks, 20 points. And Naz Reid was 7 for 9 in 24 minutes at 15 points. Those three guys off the bench shot 84%. The Wolves scored 72 points from their bench to a blowout Zion and the Pelicans by 30 points. Edwards had 27.
Yeah, break up the Wolves.
Well, it's interesting because...
Now, Dave, that's not going to be sustainable. Okay, now, they're not going to shoot 84%. Okay,
Can you for sure say that?
Yeah.
You feel confident in saying that?
And you can, too.
Yes, I can.
Okay, all right.
It was...
Nobody's going to shoot 84%.
I get that.
Okay. Not even Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Okay.
It was. I know that. It just was fun to watch a game where everything was finally going right, and you didn't rely on Kat to do everything. I think Kat had like 16 points, and it was sort of a accessory to the carnage that the bench was putting on.
It shows you exactly how this team wants to play. You and I had this conversation about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to play up and down the floor. They're going to shoot threes. They have a system now they want to play under. But the one thing I'm looking towards before this season is all over. Will a new head coach hold his players accountable if they're not doing what they're supposed to do on the floor? That's what I would like to see.
Well, he talked a lot about that, right? Heading into the break, we're going to play the guys that play hard. He had basically a 9-man rotation the other night. Okogie was the 9th. Wancho came in for garbage time, but he started Layman. Layman was a starter, and it just seemed to fit better. I don't know.
Well, they had a night because, like you said, they were down 20-4. It wasn't working then when they were down 20-4, 20-5,
20-6,
20-6. Okay, yes. Whatever it was at that time, you were saying like, well, this is not working once again. But you know, when shots start to go in, then good things happen for everyone. You know, but we all know that no team is going to shoot 84% for the rest of the season between three guys. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's ever happened before for the entire second half of the season.
Probably not.
So, but going forward, you want to see can these players adjust to the system that's going to be in place and find consistency with their play. And if guys are not doing things that they need to do on the defensive end, especially, energy level is down, engagement is not high, not willing to, you know, to compete at a high level. Will you hold those players accountable? We haven't seen a lot of accountability, you know, as of late with this organization.
Understood. Right. And this is one game. Obviously, there's a lot to go. They got Portland tonight in the first of back-to-back here with the Blazers.
On a 2-game winning streak. Have a chance going on a 3-game winning streak.
It could happen.
Get the Lakers and go on a 4-game winning streak. Yeah. Anthony Davis, you knock off LeBron James, and hey, break up the Wolves.
You got the Lakers, you got two Phoenix games, and then you come home for the Thunder, the Mavs, the Rockets a couple times. There's some wins to be had. Big picture, though, as you try to find, you know, the core of this team, and I was talking to my son Jackson, he said, Dad, I got the 10-man rotation for the 10 guys that should play for the Wolves, and I didn't dispute the 10 guys he said.
Okay.
Culver and Okogie were not in the 10, you know, and those are
kid.
Two, you know, previous number one picks.
You should listen to him more often.
Well, okay. He says that all the time. I'm not sure that's true necessarily. But, you know, it's like D'Lo and Rubio in the backcourt, Noel and Beasley at the 2. I'm not going to remember. Oh, Edwards and, Anton Lehman at the 3, Vando and McDaniels at the 4, and Reed and Towns at the 5. Those seem like the 10 guys. Well, now Culver and Okogie are not in the mix. And can you just punt from a guy you traded up to draft 6th a year ago and say it just...
If it's not working, it's not working.
That's a big miss, though, from your very first draft pick.
It's not a big miss.
That seems like a big miss to me.
Because, you know, there are a certain amount of players that come out of college, and these are the guys that you're going to have to choose from. And if we all know that Magic Johnson's and Larry Bird's and Isaiah Thomas's and Michael Jordan's and Patrick Ewing's, those guys don't come out of the draft every single year. And, you know, Bill Parcells said it perfectly. You know, this is the pool of people that we have to pick from. And if these guys don't turn out, you know, to be what their draft numbers say they should be, it's because they're leaving school at the age of 18 and 19. Most of these kids, that when they come into the NBA, they are not ready to play at this level yet because they lack fundamentals. They don't have the experience. But this is how the game is being constructed today. You don't draft based on talent. You draft based on potential. But when you have young guys who are not ready to play and you are struggling and you have guys who are ready to play, you have to put the guys on the floor who you believe can get the job done.
Agreed. But when you swing and miss with the number six pick, that sets you back.
A lot of people swing and miss. I mean,
it's tough to swing and miss that high in the draft.
I mean, how many young guys have really come in the last 2 or 3 years and really elevated a bad team to make them a consistent playoff winner?
Not saying he has to do that, but he has to show that he's a functional rotational player. If you're drafted in the top 10, the expectation is that you're going to be a functional player that deserves minutes on a team
based on potential. So who's going to help these kids grow? So, okay, all of a sudden you draft a kid like Covert. What system do you put him in to elevate his game to the next level? He's not a three-point shooter, yeah, right?
A system where you're only allowed to shoot from 6 feet in.
And he's not a three-point shooter, right?
No, he's not.
So find a style, find a system, find something that you can put into your game plan that can help him grow as a player.
Or find a team that was high on him before the draft that figures they could figure it out, like Atlanta.
They might.
And move him. Yeah. We're really late. We'll pause. We'll come back. A little more NBA conversation. It looks like the Sixers escaped a major injury scare last night. We'll chat some more NBA and then change over to the NFL for hour number two.
The Fan.
We're back. 9:04 on a Saturday morning. You are in the zone. Trent Tucker, Dave Sinekin hanging out for another hour or so. Talking some NBA. We'll move over to the NFL here shortly. Wolves had a very impressive win to start the second half of the season, knocking off the Pelicans by 30 points, getting 72 points off their bench, led by Noel, McDaniels, and Reed, who, as we mentioned, shot 84% from the floor and combined for 63 points, just the three of them. As the Wolves, both ends of the court, played very well to kick off the second half of the season. They're back in action tonight against the Portland Trail Blazers. They'll play the Blazers tonight and tomorrow at Target Center as the team that's 8-29 will slog through the second half. But, you know, for one night, for one moment, everything came together, and the Wolves had some fun, and there was some smiling and some laughing, and Chris Finch got his first win as an NBA coach, got doused in the locker room afterwards, everyone smiling. It was just a strict departure from what we had seen through the first half of the season. Double T, we at the halfway point, you kind of look at what's gone down the first half of the year, and I would think if those folks were thinking, well, who's the MVP of the first half of the season, there's a number of names that would jump to mind. I think the guy that was probably leading the MVP race was Joel Embiid for what he's been doing in Philadelphia, leading that team to the top seed in the East and just playing absolutely fantastic basketball. Scary moment for Embiid last night. Well, you just saw it for the first time during the break. As he went down really awkwardly on his left leg, and
it looked scary.
It did. They called it a hyperextension of his knee, and an MRI would be performed today to see what kind of damage was done. Well, the knee was scoped and looked at, and there was good news. No structural damage for Embiid. A bone bruise will keep him out 2 weeks, maybe three, and he'll be back on the court. And that's just...
Oh, that's great news.
It really is. For a guy that has dealt with injuries, you know, for as long as we've known his name. At Kansas, he's missed two seasons in the NBA, and there's always that what-if thing with Embiid. Like, what if he could stay on the court for a full, you know, year? And he has lately.
Well, he's got himself in better shape.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, now he's taking his craft seriously. And during the offseason, you have to condition your body so that you're able to endure the physical demands that the NBA regular season is going to ask of you. And when you don't take care of yourself, you know, that's when injuries begin to pop up.
And clearly, it was kind of freaky last night what happened, but really good news that shouldn't take him out of the MVP conversation if he misses two or three.
So who's next? I mean, you have Joel.
Well, LeBron's always going to be in the mix for, although the Lakers have been, you know, struggling just
without Anthony Davis
a little bit. I think James Harden is probably, for me, the next guy there for what he's done to kind of change his game, you know, and be willing to give up taking over the game and shooting the ball 80 times a game, going to Brooklyn and saying, all right, you want me to be the main ball handler? Fine. I know I got KD when he's out there. I know I got Kyrie. I got great players here. And what he's doing as Brooklyn is now the overwhelming favorite, I think, to surpass Philly and Milwaukee. And
without Joel, for sure, Brooklyn can take over.
If KD comes back soon.
Who else is there? I mean, besides, if you have Joel, you have James Harden, who's number three?
Boy, at the top of my head, whether it's LeBron, you know, doing it without Anthony Davis, who will be out at least another 2 weeks. That was announced yesterday.
No Giannis in the conversation this year?
Well, I think Giannis should be in the conversation. You know, he's still putting up terrific numbers. That team got off to not a slow start. They lost Drew Holiday to a COVID, and they lost five in a row. They're still right there within a game of the, I think within two games of the best record in the East. But you've won two in a row. It's unlikely, I think, Giannis wins another one. And I think Embiid and Harden are both ahead of him. But out West, I can't think of a name. You go to Utah, that's the top team. You know, Jokic maybe in the conversation for what he's been doing numbers-wise in Denver. Is that team's rising? With Mitchell and Gobert, you don't really have one guy in Utah. So
Luka name is not there this year.
No, they're not winning enough. So I think it's Harden, Embiid.
But coming to the season, many people thought Luka.
Yeah, no doubt. But they just haven't put it together. Yeah. They've really struggled. What else do I have for you NBA-wise? Oh, the other thing I wanted to get to is just, again, looking at the standings as we head to the second half of the season, to see Phoenix at 25-11 and the number two seed, that was kind of a...
It blows you away, doesn't it?
It does, because a year ago we're thinking, oh, we can get Booker because they got nothing happening. That team just, you know...
Started to make the trade before the season started.
Yeah.
Then he got Chris Paul, and they say, we're going to stay together.
I think it's remarkable what Chris Paul has done. Maybe he should be in the MVP conversation.
Well, the other teams are able to make major trades and bring in quality players that play at a very high level. You know, we just have not been able to do that.
Well, so the two names that have been floated about in the last, because the trade deadline is March 25th. So it sounds like Rosas has been as active as anyone in trying to make a deal. Now, he doesn't have a lot of assets because number one picks are not in play, and there's not a whole lot on the roster that probably gets people too excited.
Who's he looking at?
The two names that popped up on a couple of reports were Aaron Gordon in Orlando and John Collins in Atlanta. And they've coveted Gordon for a while, tried to get him last year, another guy that's been banged up quite a bit, and maybe not the same player that he was when he was dueling Zach LaVine and slam dunk
the cars and stuff like that.
Exactly. John Collins, I think, is the better player right now, but I just think he's a year away from free agency. He wants a max deal. I don't think he's a max type player. He'd fit nicely next to Cat on that front line, but what do you got to give up to get John Collins? I mean, they don't have assets that would get Atlanta excited. You know, we talked about Culver because he's, you know, they've shown interest in him and thought about looking at drafting him last year, but that's where you start. I mean, I just don't know that they have assets to get Atlanta excited.
Well, the only one major asset they have is Carl Anthony Towns.
Well, that's
it.
That's not on the table right now. This team's looking to build everything around Carl Anthony Towns still, as they should. 2 years from now, that might be a different story.
That might be too late.
Well, maybe, but they're not ready to give up on that project.
Well, it's not giving up on it. I mean, it's how you make the team better going. Make the team better going forward for the future. I mean, you make a trade here or there, and if you're able to get one of these two guys, what would that do for your team going into next year and in year after? Are you going to become a better basketball team? I'm not saying that you trade someone like Carl Anthony just to get rid of him, but if you have a certain style that you want to play, you and I discussed this about two or three weeks ago, is that sometimes you may have to move the most valuable piece to get better in the future. And if the Wolves believe that, hey, that if we are stuck where we are and we can't get better with the current roster that's constructed today, you know, we may have to make a bold move down the road.
Yep, I know that's your big thing, and I think you're a year early. I just think they're just getting started to see if they can build with D'Lo and Cat and now Anthony Edwards.
D'Lo can't stay on the floor.
Well, that would be nice to have him back. And it sounds like he did start participating in workouts. He's getting closer. And I think within a week or two, I think we'll see D'Lo back on the court. I think Rubio's game has gotten better the last couple of weeks. It looked so bad a few weeks ago.
Now the new coaches come in, and what's the record?
Since he's come in?
Yeah.
Well, that was his first win Thursday night.
And how many games have he lost?
What was it, six?
1-6, 1-7?
I don't remember how many games he's coached. I know they had lost 9 in a row. I don't remember how many of those were under the Finch watch. But double T, the guy comes in and he's named the coach and they play the next day in Milwaukee.
I mean, get that.
It's not really fair to say he's got a bunch of L's on his resume.
No, I'm just saying, you know, when look at how the team is constructed, I'm looking at how they want to play. You know, you have to think about how do we build for the next year or two or three years down the road. Sometimes you can stay in one situation and hoping that something's going to get better 2 years from now, and all of a sudden you wear those parts out. Those parts are no longer any good to you once you wear them out in terms of trying to bring in some new parts. So I think sometimes you have to be a little bit more proactive than reactive, you know, if you're trying to become better.
Well, I agree. And I think right now they're trying to figure out what are the core pieces here that 2-3 years from now we foresee still being on this roster and contributing. And I think the guys that are trying to make that wave that flag right now are McDaniels and Noel, you know, two guys that starting the season were buried on the bench and weren't getting any minutes. And now they're getting an opportunity. You know, Noel was the Pac-12 player of the year at Washington and was drafted late in the second round and kind of thought of as a three-point shooter, but has shown now with D'Lo out and now McLaughlin out, he has to play some minutes and be a primary ball handler. And at least he showed against the Pelicans, against, you know, a kid in Bledsoe that knows how to defend, he was able to hold his own and outplay Bledsoe. Bledsoe was 1-for-8. Brandon Ingram was a non-entity. McDaniels played some defense.
What are you going to have nights where guys don't shoot well, and then guys are going to play better? But I'm not talking about one night.
Understood.
I'm talking about consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, because you don't get to the playoffs by having one great night. You got to have a lot of good nights.
Playoffs?
Right.
We're not talking playoffs.
So that's what that should be your ultimate goal as you start to build your team up. How can we find consistent play where we can compete on a nightly basis? We should not be this far behind of some of the teams in the Western Conference and not be able to contend on a yearly basis.
We're passing the Rockets. I'm telling you that right
now.
So
if the Phoenix Suns can go from a year ago is one of the worst teams in basketball.
Until they got to the bubble, yeah.
And then all of a sudden now they have, what, the second best record in the West?
Yep.
You know, it's...
We're just a Chris Paul away, is what you're telling me.
We got to make some moves, man.
All I'm saying is the young kids are getting a chance, and for one night, you know, they showed that, all right, there's some talent here. Let's see if they can build on that. And now they got to go up against Dame and company, playing without Zach Collins.
I think they should be able to play against teams like that. These
absolutely.
Are kind of teams that you're going to have to find a way to beat and have some consistency against teams like, you know, Memphis and Portland and who else is
Houston,
down there?
Dallas, San Antonio.
San Antonio's a playoff team right now.
Right now they are.
And LaMarcus Aldridge is gone. Golden State's a playoff team. This is where I like to see the Wolves, that the Wolves are 17-18 or 18-19 or 19-18. Now you're talking to me. Now you can start to see that, hey, we have something here going toward the future. If they can get to that mark with this group, okay, then let's move forward.
I can guarantee you they're looking at the second half of the season like we're 1-0. Let's see what the second half does.
Are they going, okay.
If we can go, you know, they got, what, 36 games? If they can go 17-19 or play 500 ball, they'll feel like they're building
about
something.
30-6.
That's it's highly unlikely. We'll pause here. We'll come back and turn our attention to the National Football League as free agency is upon us. They start chatting on Monday. They start signing on Wednesday. What are the Vikes up to? What is the Pack up to? Some of the big names already in play. We'll chat NFL when we come back.
Podcasts.
We're back, 9:22 on a Saturday morning. You're in the Zone with Trent Tucker and Dave Sinekin. We will make way at 10 o'clock for Beyond the Pond, as the boys will give much love to Kapril Kaprizov, whose first career hat trick led the Wild to a 4-0 win over Arizona last night. Puck Talk coming up 10 to noon on The Fan. We're going to talk NFL as we continue here in the Zone. It's been all hoops. That's our bread and butter. But free agency madness kind of gets the head start on March Madness this week, as teams on Monday are allowed to officially start talking to free agents, and Wednesday the signings can be announced. And we know, Double T, both of our teams are right now in finding ways to create cap space, and both the Vikings and Packers were well over the cap a week or so ago, and both teams are starting to make moves to get under. The Vikings' big move a couple days ago was releasing Riley Reiff, which I think was a bit of a surprise, in that he was probably the best offensive lineman last season, had a better season than many thought, and instantly puts a big hole out there at left tackle. And so, and obviously Dan Bailey was cut as well. That was not a big surprise. As, we've already taken enough years off PA's life with Dan Bailey, and he's got enough gray hair, so we'll find a kicker that can be a little bit more consistent. But now, obviously, the big question is, what do they do at left tackle? Do they believe Ezra Cleveland can kick out and play left tackle? Do they move Brian O'Neill from the right side to the left side and look for a right tackle? Or do they try to find a tackle in free agency or the draft? It's clear they need two starting linemen, right? We know that they got three pieces in Cleveland, O'Neill, and Bradbury, and they got to find two starters. My question to you is, they're not going to have a whole lot of money to spend. They'll have some. And as usual, when it comes to free agency, though, that big wave of spending will happen the first few days, right, where all the big money guys are going to get paid. And the Vikings are going to be spectators, as will the Packers. They don't have money to play for big money. But this year, unlike any other in recent memory, there are going to be named players that are going to be available once that first wave goes through that are going to have to settle for
whatever's out there.
Right, smaller deals than they're expecting, and probably just one-year prove-it deals, because the cap, which always goes forward 10 or 20 million, has gone backwards this year because of all the revenue lost, which I find interesting because, yes, all the teams lost revenue, we get that, but the values of the teams have not gone backwards. That's They've true. Gone forwards, and when these new NBA deals are announced in the next couple months, you're going to see like doubling of TV deals. It's going to be so the fact
ownership is not losing money.
No, and I think it's ridiculous that the cap went backwards. That's ridiculous to me. But it is what it is, and it might be a couple years before the cap really takes off again. So a lot of veteran players. I guess my point is, the Vikes will probably be able to find a guard, a tackle, or two on a 1 or 2 year deal for a lot less money than that player would typically get in a normal year. So I don't think the situation is as dire. But there are a couple needs. There's a need at certainly two offensive linemen. There's a need on the defensive line as a pass rusher or even interior next to Michael Pierce, assuming he returns. You're going to need a safety because Anthony Harris is likely moving on. And what was the other spot that I was thinking the team was in need of adding? I guess that's it, really. I mean, linebacker, that's fine. You're not going to look for a big money guy. But between D-line, offensive line, if you could add one fairly big money player to either of those positions, which do you think is the biggest need for your squad? Getting a pass rusher opposite Danielle Hunter, assuming he's back, which I think we're all assuming, whether they make a new deal for him to lock him in for more years and maybe get some cap space, we'll find that out, I think, in the coming days. But which is the biggest need for you? Which side of the line, if you could only spend on one fairly big name, which way would you go?
I'd probably go offense.
Get an offensive lineman?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we see the need, and that Cousins needs that protection.
Well, I thought Kirk Cousins played well, you know, in the second half of the season last year. And when he gets time, you know, he's got some weapons he can pick out. But also, he was a little bit more mobile in the second half of the season. He was able to extend some plays with his legs. And that was nice to see from a Viking standpoint. But it's very important, you know this more so than I do, you have to be able to protect your quarterback. And if you can't protect your quarterback, as we saw in the Super Bowl, even a guy like Patrick Mahomes will struggle.
Yeah, we saw it. And interestingly, the Chiefs cut both of their tackles this week, which after they lost them for the championship game or the Super Bowl, we saw what happened to the Chiefs without their tackles. It's a pretty simple game. You need protection. If you're Mahomes, if you're Cousins, if you're Rodgers.
Tom Brady.
You got to have protection.
You have to have protection.
So
it's the one position that requires that everyone on the field with him do their job and do it very well. If they don't, then the quarterback is going to struggle.
Right. When Green Bay lost David Bakhtiari on New Year's Eve, you knew.
They couldn't block Tampa Bay.
There's like three guys you can't lose. You know, it's your quarterback, your left tackle, and maybe your best pass rusher. It depends on the players, obviously, but it's hard to come back from that. The guy that's going to replace him, you might be able to get past the Rams, but then here comes the Buccaneers, and that pass rush is too tough.
And we've seen when all great quarterbacks struggle at playoff time is because their offensive line could not protect them.
I'm with you. I think that is the biggest need for the purple, and whether you know Cleveland's a tackle or a guard, I don't know if they know that yet. I think it might just come down to what's out there. If they find a tackle that they think fits, then they go that route. If they find a guard, then they go that route and look in the draft for the tackle. But that is the we say it every year, right? It seems like we're spending money on our running back and our wide receivers and our pass rushers. But then when it comes to that offensive line, there's never a whole lot of money there.
Well, and that's why I understand that, you know, the quarterback gets a lot of money because it's been stated that it's the most important position on the team. But the only way these guys can function is that you have to have quality guys up front as well. And I think some of these owners are going to have to, along with their personnel, people are going to have to, in the future, take a real long look and say, hey, you know, are we really, really selling ourselves short just because we're giving these quarterbacks all these big-time dollars and not being able to add other pieces that can help them? Because they're only as good as the people around them. You can give a guy $160 million, but if he don't have guys who can make tough catches down the field, or if you don't have running backs that can they can pick up tough quality yards on that third and four or third and five or second and eight, or the offensive line can't block with him, that $160 million man that you have behind center, he is no good to you.
No, you're right. It's a balancing act, though, because you do have to have a great quarterback to win, and Dallas finally ponied up for Dak Prescott. You referenced the $160 million. He'll be the second highest paid player behind, I think, Mahomes in the NFL, and now it's kind of put up or shut up time for the Dallas Cowboys, right? If they don't win with Dak making that kind of money.
Right, it's not Dak's fault. I mean, because what's around Dak Prescott? When Dak Prescott was making, what, less than $30 million a year?
He had the best offensive line in football in front
of him. Okay, so they went 13-3 his rookie year. Was it rookie year when they lost to the Green Bay Packers?
Something like that.
Okay, so
my memory is horrible.
Ever since then, the Cowboys are winning the worst division in football at 8-8. Mm-hmm. So why all of a sudden Dak Prescott is going to be a different football player at $160 million compared to when he was making 25?
Well, I don't think Dak's been the problem, has he?
So the team is stuck. They paid all these big-time players. And last year, I mean, this past season, they didn't even make the playoffs. And I know they lost Dak Prescott. But the year before, they had to beat the New York Giants at the end of the year, which was one of the worst teams in football. So the pieces in Dallas are still there. Well, Zeke is paid, Amari Cooper is paid, you pay some other guys here and there.
Got those linemen paid that they were looking at.
And you can't trade them, right?
Nope.
So,
for them, it comes down to Dan Quinn leading that defense.
So are you telling me that these guys are going to be a whole lot better this year just because Dak Prescott got paid $160 million compared to 2 years ago?
No, but they need to get a whole lot better on the other side of the ball because they were historically
some of these players are still going to be there. These same guys that made you 8-8 are not going anywhere, right?
Right, but sometimes a new scheme, you bring Dan Quinn in there and suddenly everything can change defensively. We've seen that. Same players, same cast of characters, new system, new coaching staff, and suddenly the defense looks legit. Not saying that's going to be the case.
So do you think the Dallas Cowboys are a Super Bowl contending team just because they gave Dak Prescott $160 million?
I don't even think I'll favor them in the East this year.
Okay, and also we are concerned about the health of Dak Prescott. Will he be the same player that he was a year ago before he got hurt?
Well, we're always going to worry about that when guys come off injuries. I think Dak deserved every dollar he got.
I'm not.
He bet on himself.
I'm not questioning.
He should have been paid way earlier than this.
I'm not questioning that.
And he won that battle.
I'm not questioning that. I'm talking about, you know, the contract is the contract. You know, Jerry's going to guarantee $126 million. But we are talking about now when you get on the field, can you produce?
They got Mike McCarthy leading the show. What's to worry about?
But he won a championship with the Green Bay Packers.
He did.
Okay,
he did. Quarterbacks were
Are you
in
upset
the,
with that?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I would have liked another one or two. I would have liked.
Well, they couldn't get past Eli.
Well, once. Just for being a friend, you really know how to dig in tonight. Let's take our final pause. Other quarterbacks in the news, some restructuring news for Kansas City and Tampa
Where's
Bay.
Where's Jamar at? I want to talk to him about his Cowboys.
Oh, God. I think we've talked enough Cowboys. When we come back, we'll talk more NFL and what the Vikings might do in the coming weeks to fortify their roster. Much more in the zone. Final segment.
On the Fan.
We're back, 9:41, final segment in the zone for this Saturday, the 13th of March. Reminder, Beyond the Pond follows us. We'll be all Kaprizov all the time for Faunless and Micheletti. Beyond the Pond, 10 to noon, and then no Saturdays with Sauce today. The Fan will carry a SEC Conference Tournament doubleheader, in parentheses, for some reason. Tennessee, Alabama, followed by LSU, Arkansas. Those two games on 100.3 FM. The Fan, former Hoosier Justin Smith, kind of strutting his stuff for Arkansas these days. He'll be in the tournament.
It's very surprising to see Alabama's basketball team playing very well this year. We know about the football team and Nick Saban, but it's nice to see that also that the basketball is also getting some notice also.
Yeah, they're ranked sixth in the country and likely a two seed. Reminder, the Big Dance starts on Friday this year. And so, well, they have the play-in games.
Yeah.
You know, Wednesday, Thursday night.
Everything's so different this
but
year.
But usually it's Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday. This year it's Friday, Saturday for the first round, and then Sunday, Monday for the second round. I'm not sure why they did that.
Scheduling.
And yeah, maybe it's COVID testing and all that once the, because these teams are going to a bubble in Indiana. They are going to be bubbled. You know, it might make sense just to vaccinate everybody now that it's kind of prevalent. Just vaccinate everybody once they get to the Big Dance, and then we don't
have to. You have enough vaccines to make it happen?
I think so. At least we're getting there. Maybe we're not quite there yet. A lot of emails coming in. Well, by a lot, I mean more than one, saying that the Vikings.
You're so giddy because the Wolves won the other night. You can't control yourself.
I want to watch that game on a loop. They made three-pointers. They made more than half their three-pointers.
I've never seen you this giddy before.
It was
the last time I saw you, the Sabbath, when Aaron Rodgers won his first Super Bowl.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I love watching Jaden McDaniels play. I like Jalen Noel. I like some of these kids. I don't know. Call me crazy. I know I'm in a small group, but that was fun. Thursday night.
You got the biggest smile on your face. I can't believe it.
Well, it's not that big a smile, really. It's not.
Only if Jackson could see you right now.
A number of emailers suggesting the Vikes ought to trade with Baltimore to get their disgruntled left tackle, Orlando Brown, who wants out. He's still on his rookie deal. He only counts about $4 million against the cap. And, yes, I mean, if you can get Orlando Brown, by all means, that just solves one big need at left tackle, a huge need. Now, what are you going to give Baltimore that's going to get them excited about making the move? You don't have a second-round pick. You don't have a whole lot to give a Baltimore team that, you know, they could use some help.
Is he worth a second-round pick?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Another name, Kevin Zeitler, the guard that was released by the Giants, was a target for the Vikes a couple years ago. He'll be a free agent, but I think he's going to command a lot of dough. So, again, it sounds great. You add Brown and Zeitler, and suddenly you can turn your attention to the defensive side of the ball. But you always have to look at, you know, what happens if you make those moves. They sound great. And if you can get Orlando Brown and solve your left tackle issue, that's priority number one now that Reef's gone, is what's your left tackle situation?
Right. I mean, offensively up front, I mean, you have to be able to protect your quarterback. I mean, you got a guy out in Seattle right now who's saying, hey, you know, I'm mobile. I can get away. I can make plays with my legs, but perhaps I'm the most sacked quarterback in the game today. You know, get me some people up front that can help me out, please.
Yeah, and Seattle's one of those teams, you know, kind of like the Purple in a way where they make the splashy moves. You know, they bring in the defense, they bring in the skill position players, and they kind of say, yeah, we'll figure out the offensive line as we go. And it's hurt Seattle.
Well, because Russell Wilson has been able to navigate a bad offensive line for so many years. It was the Legion of Boom, for sure. We all know that. But over the last few years, the reason Seattle has been as good as they are is because of Russell Wilson.
Right. I also believe they have gotten too far away from running the football. They've been way off balance. When they've never had really terrific running backs, but they've just, it's kind of like Pittsburgh last year. You know, you can't just throw the ball 50, 60 times a game.
The running backs can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's the part of it,
right,
for sure.
That's a major problem, yep, right there.
The Kansas City Chiefs redid Patrick Mahomes' deal, opening up $17 million in cap space. Same thing happened in Tampa with Tom Brady, opening up about $17 million. The next quarterback needs to be Aaron Rodgers, who just by guaranteeing his money in 2021 will open up $13 million in cap space for Green Bay.
Okay.
But the question is, what do you do? You can open up a whole lot more cap space if you guarantee a couple more years for Aaron Rodgers. And that's the big interesting question mark in Green Bay right now.
I would do that.
Well, I would too. But they just drafted a quarterback and moved up in the first round to get him.
He's only a rookie. He can wait 2 more years or 3 more years. Well, Aaron Rodgers waited 4.
If you wait 3 more years, then you have to guarantee that 5th year, having never seen him play, and you're going to give him $20 million a year because that's what you have to pay a 5th-year deal.
That was money to the NFL.
Well, it's an interesting set of circumstances to see what Green Bay does with Rodgers. That's what we're all
Rodgers
waiting
right
for
now
this week.
Still helped the Green Bay Packers win.
Well, he won the MVP.
So is winning important?
Last time I checked.
Okay, a 43-year-old guy just won the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Okay.
Look, you're
good. Okay,
Packer
we're going
fans,
here.
My point is Packer fans want, virtually every Packer fan wants Green Bay to guarantee Rodgers at least 2 more years in Green Bay.
So what are they waiting on?
Whether the front office may not want that. The front office might say, we'll play him for another year, then we'll trade him and get a whole bunch of stuff and let Love take over and have a rookie contract for our quarterback for the next few years. I don't want that. Most Packer fans don't. But what they do with Rodgers' contract in the next, if they do anything in the next few days, will give us a lot more clarity on what Green Bay's future is going to look like. They did restructure Preston Smith yesterday and saved about $7 million, which was a surprise. Many thought he'd be cut, but they would have had to pay him about the same amount by cutting him. So they keep him around. They also redid Adrian Amos's deal as well. Cam Newton back in New England. That was maybe a bit of a surprise.
$14
million? Well, it's $6 million, and then all kinds of incentives that can get him to $14
million. Okay.
I think it's more likely.
Well, I mean, why not Cam Newton?
What else are you going to
you're
do
right,
if you're
right,
New
you're
England?
You're not going to trade for Jimmy G, are you?
Or Russell Wilson.
Right.
I don't think so. They weren't on Russell's list.
Right.
So
I mean, what could they give Seattle to get Russell Wilson?
Exactly.
Nothing,
just
right?
Like, you know, Chicago's still dreaming about it, but what are they going to give him? 5 number ones? I mean, they don't have a quarterback to hand over. Like, Seattle's not going to roll with Nick Foles. I still believe Russell Wilson plays for Seattle this season.
I'm with you on that.
It might be his last season, but I think he does play. Looking at Trey Lance right now, he had his pro day up in Fargo yesterday, and I think 30 teams were on hand to watch him play. He's probably the most interesting name in this draft, the Marshall, Minnesota kid. And some news came out this week that I hadn't heard that, you know, and again, I don't know how much is true and how much is fiction, but that, you know, the Minnesota had no interest and P.J. Fleck did not see him as a quarterback, said, you know, we would bring you in as a linebacker or as a safety.
What are you looking at?
But we don't see you as a quarterback. I know, right? So he ends up having to go, you know, step down to FCS and play for NDSU. He's going to be a top 10 pick. And he didn't even get to play last year.
And based on what you have seen of him and where he is today, we all would have to believe that he would have started a quarterback for the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Well, there's no question about it. Yeah, there's no question
about it. So, I mean, you know,
I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Right. I mean,
for whatever reason, PJ didn't see him as a guy that could compete in the Big Ten.
I'm trying to figure out what you're looking at.
Especially with the quarterback. We've had some decent quarterbacks here. But it's not like this is quarterback you.
Well, I mean, here's a guy who's going to number 3 prospect. Okay. How did you miss this one?
Well, he'll be the 3rd or 4th quarterback. Most believe
three,
it's Trevor
four,
Lawrence,
five,
Zach
six,
Wilson,
okay,
Justin Fields. But the chances are he doesn't get past the 8th or 10th pick in
okay.
the draft.
Do we have an 8th or 10th pick quarterback on that team now?
I don't see Tanner Morgan
okay,
going.
Okay, there you go. So
quite,
okay, how did you miss this one?
So he missed it, right? So okay. I mean, you're allowed to miss. But when you miss a state kid, you know, when you miss a kid in your own backyard who, you know, is being told and Lance didn't necessarily blame PJ, but he went on record and said, once I worked out for Minnesota and was told I wasn't a quarterback, his designation as a recruit was changed from quarterback to athlete. And then whether that happened because of what happened here, it remains to be seen.
Well, I mean, that, you know, if you look at a guy, and I think is very important for all kids, you know, whatever position you play, you have to make sure you find a school that's going to allow you to play that position. And I mean, you might want to go to the big school with the big name that's in your backyard, but if they're going to change your position and not allow you to do the things that you believe you can do at the position that you have been playing for so long, but then you have to find the place that's going to allow you to do that.
Right, and he couldn't find one in Division I, so he went to NDSU, and you know, we all know,
well,
the season he
put up. Sometimes,
you know,
they may look at you and say, well, you know, you may not fit this bill, you may not fit that bill, so we're going to move you over here and we're going to make you this. And,
or it could be, we've got three quarterbacks. You know, so if you want to come here, you got to play a different spot.
And also, you know, the things you're talking about, when you talk about offensive linemen, you know, I'm going to move a guy from one spot to see if I can make him play this position. No, just see if you can draft a person who has already played that spot and see if you can fill that hole with that person. Because, you know, moving people all around doesn't mean that they're going to be able to make those type of adjustments, especially at the NFL level when you talk about trying to protect the quarterback.
The Trey Lance journey will be really interesting to follow as we get closer and closer to the draft. I don't, at this point, I'd be surprised if he gets past Carolina at 8. I think he'll be a top 8 pick. Some believe quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, whether there's trades involved or what, that the teams are going to move up to get one of those four guys.
Who's picking first? We got who's
that? Urban Meyer and the Jags will take
Jets,
Trevor Lawrence
Jets
at 1.
Two.
Jets are 2.
Would they take a quarterback?
Some think
like Sam Darnold.
Yeah, some think they'll trade Darnold and take Zach Wilson from BYU.
Okay, who's picking 3 here?
3 is Miami, I think.
Why would Miami
or is it Cincinnati?
Miami is taking, Miami's picking 3.
Miami's 3.
Yeah.
So
if you're Miami and Cincinnati, why are you taking quarterback?
Yeah. Well, Cincinnati or not, obviously. It's whether they trade the pick out and find a team that wants to come up and grab
Tua?
I absolutely believe Miami should roll with Tua. The guy had a horrendous injury, and you took him very high last year, and you can't be, unless you're completely sold that he's not the thing.
Well, then you trade that number 3 pick for Deshaun Watson then.
If you can. 18 and next
Tua.
Year's number 1.
Yeah.
And Tua, yes.
Yeah. Don't draft, you know, if you can trade for Deshaun Watson, if you don't like Tua, don't go draft another rookie. Go out and get someone who's proven to go along with the players you have now to see if we can make a run at this thing.
Yeah, or just stay at 3 and take the best tackle or the best receiver, which is something Miami could use. Give Tua one of those Alabama receivers he threw to. Or Jamar Chase, the LSU kid, who was a better prospect than Jefferson, at least was the top receiver at LSU when Jefferson was there. So there are options for Miami.
Justin Jefferson's pretty good.
At 3.
Though.
He's fantastic. There's no question. But if Jamar Chase was actually better or on the same level, it's hard to pass on him, too. I'm really curious to see where Trey Lance goes. And it's not quarterback you, but from Wentz to Easton Stick, who was drafted a year or two ago, to now Trey Lance.
Carson Wentz had a bad break. You know, I know Nick Foles came in and saved the season and they won the Super Bowl, but Carson Wentz was doing a heck of a job for Philadelphia before he got hurt against the Rams.
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
Let's grab one here before we get kicked out. John in Somerset, you want to talk Kirk Cousins?
Yes, good morning, guys. I just want to say I think I got a great idea what they should do. The Vikings either should dump or trade Cousins and bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick.
All right, well, thanks. Dump or trade, you can't dump $30 million off your salary cap and just let him go and then find another quarterback. And you can't just trade Kirk Cousins unless a team is in love with him. And the only team that I feel like has a history is San Francisco, right, with Shanahan, who had him in Washington, and there is still some love there, but they've got Garoppolo, and that's a real – San Francisco is the one wild card that might be interested enough in moving Cousins, but that would be a Garoppolo change. Now, you'd have Garoppolo here instead of Cousins, and that's not an upgrade. That's a downgrade from Cousins to Garoppolo.
Didn't Jimmy G take his team to the Super Bowl?
The defense took the team to the Super Bowl.
And the defense let
And the
him
running
down.
Game took the team
and
to the Super Bowl.
And the defense let him down.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
They did.
Jimmy G put up enough points to win the game.
Would you rather have Cousins or Jimmy G as your quarterback? Wow.
So that's a tough question.
See, I don't love either answer, but...
I might take Jimmy G because he's younger.
All right.
But is he younger?
Yeah, he's younger.
But he's been hurt, though.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah. We got
Russell Wilson. How can I trade for Russell Wilson?
Good luck with that.
Without giving up my 4 major offensive players.
Yeah, you can't. You can't do it. We got to fly. Enjoy all the basketball. We'll be back here next weekend for Double T.
Putting for the Hoyas.
For Brett Blakemore. Go Hoyas. I'm Dave Sinekin. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Peace out.
and you.